Hey, what's up, Toby? We've made it to episode almost 60. Oh my gosh, I'm getting ahead of myself. That'd be over a year. No, like episode 30. Nice.
Happy 30. It's
I know
the halfway point to 60, as you point out. So
the halfway point, we're on our way.
Let's celebrate.
We've made it. I know we've made it over half a year, so that's exciting.
I love it, man.
Today's topic is supply chains.
Ripped from the headlines.
So if there is one thing that moves very, very smoothly in our world that humans actually touch, it is when you manufacture millions or billions of something.
Thinking about that for a second, like millions of units, that's beyond a human scale. Like that is such
a complex
and synchronized dance.
Yeah.
I tried knitting for a very brief time when I was expecting my first child. And my mother-in-law's like, you can hold water in that pot, cozy. I was knitting it so damn tight. There's no world in which I could bust out, you know, a dozen pair of Nike Flyknits sneakers in any conceivable amount of time. So you're right. Yeah. Today's supply chains are powerful.
Yeah. Well, and they're super efficient. Right. Because when you have to receive a million form factor iPhone cases that the motherboard gets put in. And I don't even know all the pieces and parts.
Right.
Right. But someone's making the camera.
Yeah.
And it's not Apple, or maybe they are, but they're not making the camera in the same place where they're assembling the thing.
Yeah. The bill of materials, all the individual units that go into a camera or a shoe or even a shirt, you know, buttons or zippers. You have the thread count, you have the raw materials that then have to go through coloring. Like there's a lot of stages at play with something simple as a shirt.
One of my favorite things that I've done in my career is I went through a McDonald's fry factory, which is pretty close. And what was amazing is the lack of people.
Oh,
there was a guy driving a truck and there was literally a guy with a hose the dump truck dumped the potatoes and a guy with a hose was basically hosing the potatoes into a little trough. And then you got to the end and there was fries. Like it was fascinating, but there was literally no people. But like from a process standpoint, it was so flipping cool.
I bet.
Like they had, and this was, I mean, it was probably a decade ago, but like they would fry these fries and if they had too much sugar, they would either be green or black, right? Cool. Because of the sugar content. And they had a little eye. And if they saw something that was out of spec from a color standpoint, it shot air.
To like blow it off the conveyor belt or
So it came off the conveyor. It was like a little fry waterfall. And if the little fry waterfall had like, it was too green, right? Or it had black spots. Yeah. It was like little air guns just shooting the stuff out. And then I think they fed that stuff to the cows or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was, but from a process standpoint, you literally have, you know, you have a multi-million dollar facility that's built on multi-million dollars of multi-million fry boxes sold every day.
Yeah, right.
Like it was ridiculously efficient. And I think about that a lot. And then, you know, with all the trade stuff that's going on, like it makes me think like, you know, McDonald's fries are still going to be at the factory that's pretty close to my house. And what happens with Apple? Like, you know, obviously they were going to put a tariff and then they're not. I'm not sure we know what's going on, nor do other people that are even in charge, which is fine. They'll figure it out.
Right.
Something will happen or won't. But if you think about those Apple facilities that are in China, you can't just pick those up and say, "Hey, let's move to Mongolia."
No, that's super interesting. The evolution too. We were talking a few minutes before we started about this, and just kind of laughing about traditional supply chains dating back hundreds of years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and like the textile business, one of my favorite examples is Berkshire Hathaway was not just a holding company. It was a...
No, they were a textile company. Right? And a terrible one.
Yeah, but what a great name. It sure sounds, very dignified, you know. I'm going to go invest in the Izod holding company. It doesn't have the same ring to it. But you know, so many of our union rights and labor rules are the byproduct of, I'm thinking about the Triangle Shirt Factory fires. I think it was in Chicago, 20s and 30s, and millions of people got trapped because the owners didn't want them going out and smoking on the fire escapes.
Yeah.
Right. And so I hope that's right. Some history that will go, actually, Toby, that was 1918, and they weren't smoking, they were peeing off the, I don't know. Anyway, the idea that there's a number of reasons why heavy industry, light industry left the U.S. is we were trying to increase regulation and try to bring just some of the rampant damage that comes with heavy industrialization.
Yeah.
So we sent it to another planet, also called Asia. And now all of a sudden we don't have those competencies, you know? I think about what is our supply chain here? Our farming now is not 40-acre plots to sustain a family or two. It's, you know, 500,000-acre plots, mass industrialization of corn products so that we can put it in our gas tanks, you know?
Yeah.
It's super crazy.
Well, it's interesting you talk about textiles. Like when I think textiles, I think original textiles, I think England, right? That's like, that's where they were in, you know, Lancashire or whatever, or whatever city they were. And then they move, right, to the U.S. to get closer to cotton.
Yeah. Right. Why ship it across the sea only to produce goods and send them back.
So you're closer to the source, raw material, right?
Yeah.
Then to your point, labor gets more expensive in the United States.
Yeah.
It's easy to ship the cotton overseas or have it grown overseas. So it goes to China.
Yeah.
Right. Then it goes from China to Vietnam, and China upgrades to chips, you know, microchips.
Yep.
And then, you know, from Vietnam, it's going to go to Malaysia or somewhere else. But like, I don't see that coming back the other way. I don't think, you know, China is going to be like, you know what, let's be a textile producer. Or the US is going to be like, you know what, let's get into textiles, or go all the way back to England.
Right. Yeah. The British are saying, tut, tut, we'd like to take back the broadcloth industry from our little island where we can't grow half the things that are necessary inputs. No, I think they're too smart for that. But you're right, Chris. Once the genie's out of the bottle, once complex supply chains have let you short, what are the implications for that? I feel like we're a nation of consumers, backed by trillions of dollars in natural resources, but otherwise we're kind of bankrupt, you know?
Well, I mean, like, we are going to follow, like, England's done okay, right? But ultimately, the wealth is going to get spread out over the U.S. or over the world.
Yeah.
Like, but if you think about, like, even cars, right? Like, cars were in Detroit, right?
That's right.
U.S., it was Detroit, and then there was obviously, you know, like, it was more global.
Yeah.
Because moving a car is harder than moving a shirt. But like, even in the US, it went to Japan.
Yeah.
Right? Or it went to where's, like,
well, now we have so much of like Hyundai and Kia coming out of Korea, right? It keeps evolving, right? Because the Japanese also only have so much industry. You hit a maximum, right?
Correct.
And then all of a sudden you're like, we need higher value goods. It's interesting. What do you think the highest value goods are that we produce here? It used to be education. Like, we used to be a destination for higher education. And we were producing PhDs, and we were keeping a lot of them, and that fed our tech.
I think it's talent.
You still think it's talent today?
But we import our talent. So like Apple's, you know, engineered in Cupertino. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, you've got Amazon Web Services, right? Like out of Seattle. Like, and it's not to say that there's not a lot of other smart people, and, you know, China, they got a lot of people there. So they will do just fine. Like the challenge ultimately is like from a manufacturing standpoint, the only way this stuff comes back is through a major, like a, through a technology shift mostly, right? Like trucks have stayed in the US, but trucks are big.
Yeah.
And the major markets in the US. And so it makes sense that they would stay here. Tesla came here because electric vehicles were a thing.
Yep. There's
right. And when government incentives.
Yeah. That's well, right. And then, you know, the trading of green stamps, green credits.
Oh, yeah.
I know this, but I mean, that's the heart of the business model, right? Is
yeah.
All of their production is creating all these extra green credits that they can sell to dirty manufacturers so they'd don't have to clean up their operations. That's been known since the early 2000s.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it's really interesting. But in the meantime, I've done work and know folks in the solar, that long solar supply chain.
Yep.
And an early client would import what I would describe as dirt, right? But it was mm-hmm. silica rich sand. They would import it okay. from almost anywhere in the world, but they would bring it to the Pacific Northwest because we have all this hydroelectric, which makes our electricity so inexpensive.
Yep.
And most significant input for turning sand into polysilica is electricity or silane gas. Mm-hmm. You've got to electrify this stuff. And so they would cart it, you know, thousands of miles to take it one step in the supply chain. We take those raw materials and distribute them thousands of miles to get it to the next.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this has been a known thing. And so even though, and this came out of like a lot of the heavy manufacturing long before we were in the business of solar panels computer chips, all this kind of heavy manufacturing was already in place. Now most of that's been disassembled and shuttered and offshored.
Yeah.
So turning that key in the ignition is not as straightforward as we might want it to be. Yeah.
Well, because it's one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, let's just do this. And you're like, well, let's, you know, if you just think about a phone.
Yeah.
Like what do you have to do to get a phone? Like from a supply chain standpoint.
Yeah. Right.
You've got the chip that's manufactured somewhere. You've got, you know, RAM that's probably made at, you know, Micron right up the street from me.
Yep.
Like, well, actually, funny story. So I've got a buddy that works at Micron. They're building a huge fab.
Yeah.
Right. And we're like, where does that stuff go? I mean, I'm in Boise, Idaho. We are like, we're 5 hours away from anything major, and that's Salt Lake City. And that's not a whole lot to, you know, be happy about. But if you want to go 7 hours, you can be in Portland Seattle. And
world's away.
10 hours and you're in the Bay. I mean, there's not a whole lot in between us. Anyway, I'm like, where does this stuff go? Like, are they going to, one of my other buddies was like, well, let's put it on a train. Like, would you put it on a train? Like, that would be cheap.
Yeah.
And my buddy that works at Micron is like, no, they'll just fly it. And I'm like, where? To China? And he's like, these things are so small. They'll just put it on a plane and they'll fly it to Shanghai or wherever that manufacturer is.
Wow.
Because their supply chains are that short. Time is of the essence.
That's incredible.
And so I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah. So when we talk microchips, we're not talking the size of your thumb.
No, we're talking like very small.
That's a suitcase full of microchips. Well, that explains everything now, Chris.
It was just really interesting that they're spending, you know, they're spending billions of dollars a couple miles from my house,
right?
Only for them to most likely, fly the stuff to China to put into the Chinese manufacturing something or other,
right?
It was just very interesting. Like you can't because where are you going to truck it to in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, who's manufacturing this stuff? I mean, you probably will, but
the next step in the chain, though, we're in a world where transportation is relatively inexpensive now, whether it's flights or boats or trains.
Yep.
You know, we've solved fundamental transportation. I hadn't thought about them actually flying chips. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting. Now, okay, let's circle back to process debt and why we have problems in our businesses.
Why are we talking about?
What is going on?
Hold on.
You went totally off topic. You talk supply chain. I love supply chain.
You do love supply chain.
I think it's interesting in that when humans have the ability to mass produce something, it is amazing how efficient we can be.
Yeah.
And in our day-to-day jobs, we don't mass produce that many things. Almost everything is bespoke. And we don't even think about our work in that way.
Boy, isn't that true? Back to your potato sorter.
Yeah.
Imagine if we had to peel the spuds by hand.
Yeah.
Fetch them out of the fry grease with our bare fingers. That's that job, but somebody's got to do it.
Oh.
And then visually sort it. That's impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the same, you had the same output every single time.
Yeah.
And a human could do that. A human could easily sit there and do that.
Yeah.
But you had that same, you had the same input, you had the same output. And oftentimes in business, to be cute, we have the same input, but we have a different output all the time.
Sometimes on purpose, a lot of
times. Sometimes you want to have an impact, and you know, obviously our day jobs are political, and you know, you gotta put food on the table.
Yeah.
And so it's a little different, but I mean, I just think that the contrast is really interesting when your inputs and your outputs are always the same.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you can do. But if you're changing both ends, it's amazing how messy it can be. And that's why our work can be so frustrating.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, because what that made me think about, Chris, was the power of the ISO standards for quality, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, to your point, everything that we do as humans, fingers on the keyboard, is super custom. I can't build a machine that sends off the emails I need to actively communicate. We were talking about last week, right? Process and the importance of effective communication. I can't do that at mass.
Yep.
Right. We can spam people at mass. We hear all these promises, you know, we get these LinkedIn things depending on what your channels are, but yeah, that's a great call out. So the enormous volumes of manufacturing and supply chains really does assume that we can do millions of things identically, and that's the desired goal.
Well, and I think if businesses stop trying to be so creative with some of the standard things that they're always going to do, like businesses are always going to do a QBR.
Yeah.
Like you're just going to do them forever. But why do they have to be cute?
Yeah.
Like, I wrote an article on this, like, I don't know, probably 3 years ago. It's like, just give your people a form, have them fill out the form, have your marketing team make the PowerPoint, give the PowerPoint to the people for them to edit.
Yeah. And then
you're done.
Yeah.
And then if you do the same form the next quarter, you know what you can see? What happened last quarter.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
Because
speaking of textiles at Berkshire Hathaway, I was at an energy company that was acquired by one of their subsidiaries.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the first day after it was official, everybody got an email that said, reports will now look like this. It's going to be in this font. It's going to be in this layout.
Thank you.
And think about how big a machine that is, you know, to be able to sit on whatever it is, $7.5 gazillion dollars in cash while they're climbing the market. The reason why they can do that is everybody understands they're part of this enormous machine that has to work in front.
And imagine like how much mental space that frees up.
Oh, yeah.
When you're not trying to figure out like, is this font too big?
Yeah.
Do I have too many bullet points? Like just give the people a form.
Yeah.
And give it to your marketing team. Like maybe we should start this business, Toby. This is what we should do. QBRs. QBR form factory, something extraordinaire, process that killer.
The irony, Chris, is that I would dare say that if you and I jumped in a time machine and went back to the early days of GE, you know, 30, 40 years in where they had some routines and process, maybe about the time Welsh was starting to come up, I bet the conversations around QBRs were at least as competent, if not more sophisticated than we have today. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Because they didn't have PowerPoint to muddy it up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have the graphics guy do some cutouts and use his protractor and bring in the charts.
Yeah.
You know,
it was written.
Yeah. Not the baffling with bullshit that we have today.
Yeah. Well, like what's interesting is like We, you know, I think oftentimes we use PowerPoints in lieu of writing because it's easier to consume and much easier to deceive.
Yeah.
And not like maybe not even intent, like even not even intentionally, but like
that's interesting.
You put, you know, you have to clarify something complex on a PowerPoint in 4 bullet points. Mm-hmm. You're going to miss some things and you're going to say some stuff and the assumption, and you're going to have that communication break. And then all of a sudden they're going to, you know, they're like, well, why didn't you tell us that? And you're like, I did on PowerPoint on bullet three. You're like, that's not how I read it. Yeah. You're like,
did you not go to the management notes and disclosures on appendix 37C where I outlined?
Yeah. I gave my safe harbor statement that all statements were future looking. And this may or may not result in something that actually may happen.
That's right. Safe harbor.
That's funny. All right, man. We did it again.
I love it.
Thanks, sir.
Good conversation. I appreciate the reflection on supply chains.
All right,
buddy. Have a great week.
Yep. See you next week.
Bye.